This is your pollinating Dr. Tar.
This is Professor
Feather. Gesundheit.
This is the midnight. The cops are coming to get me. Gadfly.
And this is Dr. Head. And we bring you the experience of... I couldn't remember what it was.
So that music in the beginning was called Washed. It's a remix by an artist named Pie Boy.
All right.
Pie Boy?
Yeah, the original was Silo Dome.
Oh, okay. All right. Oh, yes. Fellow inmates of the asylum and beyond, we bring you another episode of Unsane Radio in which we talk about a movie. Today's movie we're going to be talking about is a movie called Hayseed, written in 2023. I mean, made in 2023, written and directed by Travis Burgess. This is his only feature-length film as a director so far. Cinematography is by Brad Porter, who did mostly short and movies, and he's doing one other feature length. He did a feature length in 2024 called Seagull. The story takes place in the fictional small town of Emmaus, Michigan, which was shot on location in Eaton Rapids, Michigan, by the way. It starts with a short montage of the main street. A close-up of a woman enters the scene. She stands there for a moment, looking at something off camera. The scene switches to a rear shot of her moving toward a church, the Emmaus Holy Church. We will learn this is Darlene Halsey, played by Ismenia Mendez, the Reverend Edgar Dowding's secretary. The Reverend is played by Peter Carey. A title is briefly superimposed, stating that it is Sunday, 5:02 a.m., the morning of the sunrise service, against the backdrop of a pan-up of the steeple of the church. Halsey enters the church, goes to the reverend's office, calls out, knocks on the door. He's not there. She moves on through the rest of the church. She comes to two women preparing food, asks if they have seen Reverend Dowding. They both say no. These two women will be significant characters throughout the rest of the film. She moves on, the camera following her into another room where she sees Bob, David Luther Glover, the church organist, who is quite deaf, setting up chairs, asking him if he's seen the Reverend. He says no. She then asks if he's seen Duck or Don, two more significant characters that will be revealed later. She moves into the main area of the church. The room is semi-dark, each of the large stained glass windows lit up beautifully. She calls out for the Reverend but gets no response. She moves deeper into the room, heading into the back room. There are stairs leading up to the dais. Water is flowing down the stairway. She cautiously moves up the stairs and to the back of the dais. This is shown in a long shot. She looks down and screams. The scene shifts, the title superimposed over a long shot of the church. It then switches to another montage of the town. The sound of the local radio station playing. It switches to a POV shot of a car driving down the street. The scene switches to the interior of the car. It shows a lot of clutter, mostly food wrappers. Another title is superimposed 1 week later, then switches to another, Saturday, 7:59 a.m. It disappears as the camera pans up to an over-the-shoulder shot of the driver who is smoking a big cigar, Dr. Head, and squeezing a hand exerciser with his right hand as he's driving. We will soon learn this is Leo Hobbins, played by Bill Sage. He is a private investigator working for an insurance company. The plot of this movie is an investigator is sent to Emmaus to investigate the death of Reverend Dowding, which has been accidental drowning. That's all I'm going to say for right now. That's leading up because I want to get everybody's opinion. This is an independently made film. And by obviously not people that aren't like very experienced at what they're doing, mostly shorts. They've all been involved in mostly short. And the cinematographer has done a lot of music videos, too. So I'm going to throw it out there to start with Dr. Head. What's your general opinion of this movie?
I really liked it. I thought it was so well done and a lot of fun. Kind of quirky, but not over the top. If it reminded me a lot of something that the Coen brothers would do in that regard. And to sum it up, the two movies that, together, it was like Murder on the Orient Express meets Fargo. So Murder on the Fargo Express, you know. Yeah, I liked the insurance investigator a lot, his character, and what my knee jerk was to go back to the old time radio, Johnny Dollar, which I loved. Johnny Dollar, the insurance investigator with the action pack expense account, yeah. Old time radio. Today's expense, 19 cents, steak dinner, you know, it's like, yeah, $1.38, flew to Hawaii. But I just thought, as the story unravels, you get these characters, and the small town people are going to be like, but I just love how everything was interwoven and this interconnectivity between everybody for their own motives. And, you know, it was kind of quirky, but not too quirky. It was serious at times, you know, but not too serious. So
and humor. There was a fair bit of humor.
Right? Yeah, I thought the performances were good. You know, people were acting. It didn't come off screaming like amateurish. You know, no. But I'll stop right there and I'll hand it over to Midnight Gadfly.
Yeah, I really liked the movie too. It reminded me of a '90s independent movie, like that Renaissance of.
It almost reminded me of a TV series, you know, type.
Well, it's because it has a lot of TV actors in it. You know, a lot of those doing that. I liked it. I thought the structure was impeccable. Like, it was really well done. Most of the acting was pretty good. Some of them were clearly more veteran actors than others. And I think my only criticism is I thought they didn't maintain the tonality quite. They didn't balance it as well as they balanced the structure of the story. So, you know, it was really good. It was kind of surprising, you know, that who all was involved with the, you know, at the very end. So I don't want to spoil it because I really think people should watch this movie. This is a lot of fun. Yes. Yeah, it's a lot of fun.
Yes.
And right. I like the main character, the insurance guy. I just thought he was cool and how his backstory unraveled. And I think they were purposely doing a kind of a cliche or a trope with him. You know, I just thought that, you know, well, you're like, oh, okay.
He was the hardened actual police detective who had worked 25 years, you know, but then you found out he had a gambling problem. That's why he got kicked off the force.
He just mentions it so casually too.
Doctor.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Tar, what do you think of this movie?
No, I had a lot of fun with it. It had its ups and downs. We've all said that. And just kind of like, you know, the acting's not the same consistent all the way through. But yeah, I liked it. The complication of the story, you know, just how, and it's everything's told in flashbacks and such, every point of views. And yeah.
Rashomon.
Very non-linear.
But it comes off as like a TV series in the early 80s or something, detective show sometimes, and it was kind of funny, but I didn't know if I liked it or didn't like it. It was kind of weird.
You know what maybe makes it feel like a TV? There was one moment where they dip to black, almost like you're going to a commercial. And then we come back up, you know, and I'm like, have they done that before in this movie? I'm like, because, yeah, that was a very odd choice, you know, but, you know, unusual.
I think for a lot of it, too, is the cinematography was shot kind of like TV. Mm-hmm. There are moments where it's not, but... Yep. I wasn't really highly enamored of the cinematography. It was
functional.
Good. And it was adequate.
Functional,
it was adequate.
That's a good word for it.
Nothing to rave about, you know. So the movie is about this Reverend Dowding who his secretary finds ostensibly drowned. But she also has her doubts, and when the investigator comes in, and he's the stereotype wearing the trench coat, you know, I'm drinking coffee, I got my own cup, you know, and just, you know, kind of, but also he has that jaded, he says, yeah, I'm here just to get it signed off so that the insurance company can deny their claim. That's what he says early on.
Right. It's just cynical. Like, yeah. I don't give a fuck. Yeah. I have no personal interest in it. I'm getting paid, you know, and he tells those kids that one time, like, you wouldn't want the pay. I'm getting like, what am I making, a minimum wage, you know, and expenses or something, you know, and he's just like, oh, fuck me, man. Yeah.
Yeah. But those little details.
Oh, yeah. You're introduced to all of the, go ahead.
No, I was just saying those little details. They bring a lot of those little details back. So, like, I brought my own coffee cup. Well, he's at the diner the one time drinking a couple of beers, and she's like, we got to do something. And he leaves without the coffee cup, and she starts to get up, and she grabs the coffee cup and brings it with
her. She grabs the coffee cup. Yeah. Well, she, the secretary, what's her name? What's her name? Darlene. She's the instigator of and draws him in into the to what is really going on. She suspects that it's murder, and he starts looking. Let me back up a little bit to talk about some of the details that are good. When he's in the diner the first time, and the woman has got her back to him and watching the TV, what brings up Fulcher's business on there, and then it also starts talking about the death, you know, and the funeral that just happened and everything. And he's like, you know, he's a typical detective. He notices, he watches this, and you know, you could just see it in his face. He's taking everything in, you know. And then I love it when he takes that cup and slams it on the thing, and she like just whips around and says. He said, I want this refill. Oh, no, you have to have our own cup. We don't refill. And she brings out a plastic cup, and he just takes it and dumps it into his cup. And those little moments, those are the little kind of the comic stuff that kind of pops up. And which brings us to, he goes in. Oh, talk about the policeman.
Yeah.
Trooper Gellis, I.L. Gellis, who is the typical bumbling cop, you know, in a small town.
You see the same thing.
And he plays it well. The actor plays it well, though.
Too. Yeah, like in Scream.
He's pretty funny.
It's Barney Fife, you know.
Yeah, and he's funny.
I thought he did a pretty good job of it. But and then they go into the church where the investigator has all the people, all the main, you know, the usual suspects, I guess you could say, you know, come in and. They set up a chair for him in the middle of the pews, in the aisle between the pews. He sets his coffee cup down in a pew, which I thought was kind of iconoclastic and good. But then they have the other people sitting quite a ways away from him, up on the platform, you know, which I thought was kind of an odd that distance. And that I don't know if that was a directorial move, or if the cinematographer said, let's do that, because this kind of conveys the separateness of the the investigator who's a newcomer, and then all of the people who are associated with the church and with other aspects.
Yeah, they're all together. The symbolic, and they're clustered together, and he's all way out here. Yeah.
Yes, yes. And so then he interviews each one of them, and they are all unique, you know, and a bit quirky, like you're going to have in, you know, in a lot of these small town movies. And
attaboy, Luther.
I like the one guy who comes in. He's a major character. His nickname is Duck. And you find out that he nicknamed himself.
Yeah.
You can't nickname yourself. Who says you can? Yeah, you can. You can nickname yourself. Which later on comes around to a kind of another kind of interesting scene later on in the movie. But he interviews each one of them and starts getting to know these characters, you know, and the people who are involved. And it goes everybody's involved in the church, you know, and so that it's all, you know, based around this church. And then he meets with the girl outside, and, you know, she starts saying, look, I don't think this is an accident. And they were talking about the stone that was on that he fell in and he had this stone, this big stone, which made no sense. I mean, you know, and there again, the cops, the coroner said, you know, he drowned, so case closed. Yeah. And he's, you know, and he and the trooper Gellis didn't get along from the very beginning. There's kind of an antagonistic attitude between the two of them, because he keeps saying, no, case is closed. I thought you were just going to go through the motions, you know. But as the movie progresses, he gets drawn more and more into the backstory of each of the characters and how all of this starts to relate. And it just, I think the writing is, for the most part, is very good. There are some awkward moments. I give that more to inexperience, I think, than anything.
It gets
a little overly complicated
sometimes.
I think he's a good writer, and I think his direction is pretty good, and I think he's going to be somebody to watch, you know, to, I know the next thing he's doing was supposed to be released this year was a short, because he obviously, this was an independent film, and he probably just hasn't got anybody else to, or he hasn't written it. He's probably got some scripts and just hasn't found anybody to do the financing. But, there are moments where it doesn't quite work, you know, doesn't gel, but there are also just some really brilliant moments. And like you all said, like the nonlinear fashion that the story is told in, because things are such a good device for revealing. You know, you have this character, you don't know much about him, and then there's a flashback, and you get more information about that character and what they are, you know.
Sometimes the flashbacks also set something up that they don't tell you right away. So, like, when Fouch or whatever gives the money to the waitress, he says, but your brother has to give something to me. I didn't make the connection right away, you know, with
that
whole
thing.
No,
you didn't. There was no way to make that connection.
But he gave you the clues, because he goes, you just got out of jail. They had said he just got out of jail, and he's like, 6 years.
Yeah.
You know, and then finally they're like, your brother, and I'm like, oh, shit, yeah. Was it, you know, I think their detail, all that detail help to distract you, you know, and so that when the stuff came back, you're like, oh, I did hear that. I just didn't make that connection, you know? So yeah, there's
pulls
really good.
Back into
any problems I have with the movie are completely forgivable. I don't, you know what I mean? It's just, they did not detract from the movie at all.
That's
what
I was thinking. It was just,
it ultimately works out pretty good. Very, very complicated plot, you know, and storyline, and I think he spent a lot of time on the script, I think, you know, working it out, and then his direction is pretty good for the most part, and I liked most of the actors. I didn't really find an actor that I didn't like. My favorite actor was Bob, the deaf organist. I don't know why. He was the you know, kind of a funny character, because they're doing the one scene, and I really hate to go a lot in the movie to reveal a whole lot, you know, because I really think people should. This is a movie I would recommend for people to go see, especially as an independent film, you know, which I'm highly, you know, into, and we'll always, you know, try to promote. But the one scene where they're trying to think, but he's playing the organ. Totally oblivious to everything that's going on in the back rooms, you know, in the office. Totally oblivious to whatever's going on, just playing the organ.
Well, that's it. I said there's all kinds of scenes you could describe that wouldn't give the movie away at all. Like when
that's true.
He decides he needs the tracker. They set him up with that tracker at the beginning, right? And you're like, what? And
yes.
it comes back where they're going to use it, and he's got to go retrieve it from the junkyard. And I love how they did that scene. He tries to get her to go in, and he goes, and she's like, no, you. And he goes, well, that didn't work. And so he gets out, yeah. And he starts climbing up the fence, and you hear dogs. He goes, oh, great, dogs. And then we don't watch him try to fumble over the fence. He cuts. It's him getting back into the car with the tracker, you know. And I'm like, that was good.
And kind of breathing hard.
Yeah.
I like that. The other scene I thought was that was well done and budget conscious was the when he gets run off the road and there's the car wreck.
Yes.
Yeah.
And you see the kind of the close ups, and then it cuts to the car being upside down.
Already upside down.
Yeah, it goes to black and it shakes and
Yeah.
And that's what I thought. Yeah. That's clever.
I like that.
And that's really good.
That's clever. Good use of a budget, you know,
when I think
you're not
everything. Yeah, I think when they went to the junkyard, they got a car that looked like his, just drug it out there and put it upside down, you know, that might have been in a collision.
I think so, too, yeah.
So I'm like, that would be, you know, it's so easy.
Yeah, that's probably true. Yeah.
The scene I liked was when
a lot of
scenes. Yeah. He was drinking beer, and Darlene comes in, and it's the same one where she picks up the coffee cup, she goes, we shouldn't talk about it here. And he goes, no, here's okay. They have eggs.
Because he had just
finished. Well, then he has the beer, and she keeps taking the beer and setting it off to the side.
Yeah,
you know, to make him focus. He keeps grabbing it.
And
back,
he pulls
it
by
his. And also,
and there's already like three other ones right there too.
Go ahead.
I could tell. I was looking at what he was drinking, and it looked like he was drinking like Mountain Dew or something. You know, it was kind of greenish yellow. And I'm like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
So I'm like, because I was thinking, oh, I'd love seeing whatever they're drinking. If it's like the local beer, sometimes they make a deal of it. Like when I see Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2, it's the beer that they used. Was it Shinerbach? I think one of the sponsors.
What was it?
You know, I think it was a Shinerbach beer. You see, all the beer in TCM2 is like Shinerbach, and they have them like, you know, situated because that was they got money from them to help finance the movie, so they were in the movie. So I always look for those kind of little things, like is he drinking like some like Michigan brewery, you know, like that's what I was like waiting to see, or you know, something like that.
That's kind of what I that's probably what it is.
I was like, it was probably Mountain Dew.
because
it was yellowish green. I'm like, oh, that's no beer. There's no beer that color that I'm aware of. Well, I'm like, well, the bottle, but no, it still looked like it was green liquid.
Yeah. And the beauty of the movie is there are multiple storylines that all just weave together and intersect and then diverge, such as Duck and what's her name? Willa, the relationship. Duck is one of my favorite characters in the movie, you know, just because he's such a fuck up. I mean, he's not very smart. You know, I like the one scene, where he was induced to go in and steal some money out of the safe in the reverend's office. Well, later on, the secretary, when they're talking about this, and she goes, it's bolted down to the floor. And he goes, oh, that would make a big difference.
Yeah, when they just assumed that she would give the combination to them. Yeah, you know what I mean? That whole part of the plan. She goes, what makes you think I would give you the combination to the safe? You know, she just gets flustered.
Well, that brings up her girlfriend, Alyssa, was it? Or, what was her name?
I can't remember.
Cassandra, played by Caitlin Carver, who I thought was pretty hot.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And so did Darlene, because they were a couple.
Just because she was a lesbian, I know.
That whole relationship then really turds, you know. That's one of the good turnabouts, I think, when you find out certain things about Caitlin that, you know, that she's just not, she's kind of a grubber. You know, I don't know what else. She's the local pot dealer, too.
She's shifty. Because you get to see like a scene earlier in the movie, and then you get to see it from the other side, like when she takes the phone call and has to go outside or whatever, and it's from Duck.
Yeah,
but then you see what happens later.
Yeah. Well, how she treats it. Yeah,
yeah, she thinks one, Duck.
She go ahead. That's when you know she pulled that gun.
Yeah,
and put it in the couch, you know, next to her. You know, never had to use it or anything, but. You're going, wait a minute, man. She's a little more, you know, a little more than meets the eye, I think, you know. A lot of them are that way. I mean, you find out throughout the, you know, that everybody has their secrets, their you know, their quirks that, you know, Willa's mother, you know, what's her name? What is her name? Joyce, played by Catherine Morris, who's an actor that you know that you've seen before. There's several in here that the guy that plays Fulcher, he's kind of a, you've seen him in other things. There's a couple others.
Fulcher's, you know, wife,
you've seen
her. Fulcher's wife. So, dude,
yeah, Dr. who Head? Seems to be a non-entity.
Were you going to say something,
although,
Dr. Head?
No, I thought he was, wait, go ahead. If you want to finish that thought, Heather, go ahead. Although,
I was just going to say that another aspect of the of him showing that he really is a good detective is when he first meets her. She's coming back, taking all the luggage. That's where you've been, Miami. Oh, in a fur coat, and they kind of blow him off and go in. Later on, that becomes very significant.
Right, right.
And I like the play. I don't know how much to say about them, because there's a lot of things you can reveal that if you reveal them now and somebody goes watching me, well, okay, that, you know, you kind of spoiled that for me.
Yeah.
And so I, you know,
it shows
I,
you the mind.
I'll just
of the,
I'll just
detective.
Say this. Yes, it shows his he was a detective for 25 years. I mean, that's a long time, you know, and he was obviously a pretty good detective. And even when he was fired, they paid, because he had gambling problem. They paid his gambling debt and then booted him, you know. So, so like, you know, kind of acknowledging, yeah, you've given us a lot of good time, but we just got it. We got to let you go because is, you know, illegal. And I like that aspect of it. And they're again slowly revealing him, you know, throughout the movie. Everybody, there's a slow reveal on every character.
Layers.
That's the brilliance of the writing, I think. Very, very layered. Yes.
The onion.
Yes.
I just have one glaring problem with this that you guys mentioned, the one character, I forget her name. She's the pot dealer. They live in Michigan.
Yeah.
The cheapest cannabis prices in the country. There's no need for a pot dealer in a small town because
don't really say what year it is.
Oh, okay. I guess I was just assuming
they
don't
really say what year it is.
They don't. No,
they really don't. So
the way Fulcher's dressed, you would swear it was the 80s.
But
that would.
That's kind of what I for some reason, 80s or not.
It comes off that way, doesn't it? 70s.
I thought 80s. About that too, Dr. Head. I thought that same thing. Then I just maybe this was maybe a year before they even, you know, was it legalized.
Okay.
Because how long has it been legalized in Michigan?
Oh, years. I mean, well, this was made came out in 2023, so it was probably last 5 years, probably.
Yeah.
So
that is kind of if it's supposed to be in modern day.
If it's supposed to be contemporary, kind of I'm like, there's no need for a pot dealer in Michigan because you can just drive 5 minutes and go to a dispensary, you know, or go to Monroe and they're all there. I mean, that's where I went for 420. There's strip malls. All the dispensaries are right in this cluster, like 15 of them within rock throwing distance. It was like, oh my God.
Same in Adrian. It's the same in Adrian.
Yeah, in Ypsilanti. Yeah.
It's like, they're all right on one strip. Yeah.
Yes, it's beautiful.
Well, maybe she was the one everybody chipped in and she went to the dispensary.
She could have been the mule. You know, I get it.
That's it. Yeah.
Maybe she's a mule. That's, yes, I understand. Yeah. I know someone who functions as that.
Dispensary was too far. And They all just said,
right. She'll go get it for you.
You'll go get it for us. Yeah, exactly.
I'll charge me a few extra bucks enough to where I can get something free for myself, you know, kind of thing. Like, yeah, why not? That's
See,
what
now
I
we
do.
Just justified her.
Right, her existence. Right, there you go. Yeah, no one else wants to do it. Yeah.
But I did. I agree with you, Dr. Head. When she first came in and she was dealing pot, I went, wait a minute. You know, this is Michigan.
Yeah.
That's kind of weird.
You don't
and then
that.
I dismissed it, I guess. I guess just dismissed
yeah.
it.
Yeah.
But yeah,
it's still a fun movie.
It is a really fun movie.
What else
again,
can we?
I'd never heard of it before. Again, never heard of it. Never saw it before. Had no, and I purposely don't look at the movies. What we're gonna do, like I don't look at anything about it. I want to go into completely not knowing anything and just see how it
right.
unfolds. And this one, you kind of had that tone. Kind of very quickly asserts itself as. We're going to be weaving back and forth between something serious and something comical. We got some quirkiness. You kind of got to get that feeling going into it. But I do really appreciate the story and how it unravels and the telling of the story. And I just, as an independent film, I thought, wow, this was really fun. This was nicely and well done.
Yes.
Yeah. It seems
like a labor of love too,
there was one film on all parts. One film festival where they were the final movie of the evening and they sold out, so they simulcast it to other theaters there and they all sold out. So like three theaters they sold out.
For this movie,
yeah.
Oh, really? Nice.
Film, good film for them. Festival,
yeah.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
He got the script was at a film festival contest and it made the last round. It didn't win, but it got to the last round, so. But yeah,
well, that's cool.
I would like to.
I think he's somebody to look. I'll keep looking out for him. You know, see if he ever comes up with another one here sometime. And IMDb didn't really list. The only thing they listed was that upcoming short in this year, which might have already been out. I don't know. I didn't really go into depth on that.
Isn't he a producer?
Yeah. Well, for shorts mostly.
Okay.
And maybe music videos. That may be where he and the cinematographer, I think, might have hooked up. I didn't really look into the shorts or his. He only has like seven producer, and I think they were all shorts.
Yeah. Cool. Yeah, I'll look for it.
I think he only has like two writing credits or something like that. This movie and something else. A short, I think the short that was just coming out this year, Seagull or whatever it's called. That's what the cinematographer was working on, I think.
And this was another movie that could have been easily destroyed with the wrong soundtrack. Like some kind of harmonica, added to the comic effect or something like that. It would have you would have expected that, like some Simon and Simon 1980s sitcom kind of stuff. And it doesn't. It's. I don't remember, again, I wasn't paying attention to the music because I was trying to follow the story. But it could have easily been blown into unintentionally funny. And it never goes there.
Yeah. Right. Well, the music started out the first time you hear the music. It's got that bass that just goes boom, boom, boom. And it's almost a bluesy feel, you know, that first music. Then when you get in music later on, it's all noir jazz type, you know, that's kind of apropos to the story. Yeah, the music didn't really bother me in this at all. You know, it just kind of seemed to fit. And, you know, because they're going for some of that, you know, homage, you know, to the noir stuff and, you know, the jazz. And I kind of like that. And they're really good songs. Whoever the composer, I didn't make mention of him, but I thought they were very well done. So, yeah. Kudos to that, you know, and that too. That's what I said. Not much to really criticize on the movie, you know, on the whole, especially being his first directorial debut and, you know, screenwriting, you know, wrote the script and directed it. I think it's very impressive, actually.
Yeah.
You know,
directing something that complicated, you know, there's seasoned directors that could not have handled that script, you know, and we've seen it.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. 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 Yeah.
So yeah.
Yeah, that's true.
And I'm glad
I highly recommend it.
Yeah, he's young.
As we all do, I guess, yeah.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Good movie.
All right. Is that it? Are we out?
Anybody have any fair last words?
Go see it.
Yeah.
Watch it.
Yeah, you guys want to watch me take a dump? Say! Mm-hmm.
I messed it up just so you wouldn't feel bad, Dr. Head.
Thanks. Appreciate it.
Oh, insane radio. Don't interrupt me, Tar. I was making an important announcement. Yeah. Unsaneradio.com. Go there every 290 plus episodes are there, and you can listen to them all right there and look at the really cool art for most part when Tar's not too lazy and just picks a Marvel picture.
Tar,
I'm sorry.
So volume,
anyway,
volume.
Unsane Radio is on the Facebook. We're also, you can hear us on Spotify, on Apple Podcasts. And Tar and Feather has a YouTube channel now. It's Tar and Feather's Psycho Cinema. We have about a half a dozen movies up, and with more to come very shortly. We're just going to flood our channel with movies.
Yes.
We're going to flood our...
Yeah.
We're going to flood something.
Flood is the right word, too.
Where's my sock?
And Tar and Feather is just, we got another episode coming out shortly. Seriously.
Yeah, we're getting there.
And heavy metal horror on the podcast, heavy metal horror on the Unsane Radio, heavy metal horror podcast on the Facebooks, Montag Lewis on Instagram. We're going to have some good stuff coming up your way. And We Freaks, WEEFREEKZ, a family friendly webcomic on Facebook. It's like Peanuts meets Circus Sideshow Freaks. It's a thing of beauty by our beloved Blue Fez, John Boise.
I'd like to give a shout out to the Monster Channel. Shows horror host movies all the time. Also, The Vortex, which shows all horror-hosted movies without fail. And Frog Radio Hour with the evil Dr. Toad. I listen to it every week. I love it. He finds some of the most obscure progressive rock music from the 70s, especially, that I had never heard. A lot of foreign stuff, but you're not American stuff. It's been extremely good. And also to WeirdSistersRadio.com, who Molly DeKay is, she's just a wonderful person. She's given a whole slew of DJs slots so they can play their particular type of music every night. You can listen to it every night, Eastern Standard Time at 11 p.m. Some of them are an hour, some of them are 2 hours. Some of them are good, some of them, it's not music I like, but they're all unique. And I got to give Molly kudos. She's a wonderful, wonderful person.
The Midnight Gadfly will be starting his new job as a salesman for Stamp On Tampon. Our motto is, We'll tell you where to stick it.
Tamp it, tamp it.
Based in Tampa, Florida.
That makes me Tampanese.
Wasn't that what Dr. Tar played in band, the Tampany?
Yes.
Yes.
Just once in a while.
And don't forget about the red tide. Yes. That's
right. Tar. Tar. Tar.
You know, I'm getting sick of this clip.
I'm not.
Had arrived at his house just after midnight.
Put the lotion in the fucking basket.
I had to get up. I had to go bed early.
More about the relationship between Tar, the accused killer,
and Mr. Tar.
Tar says that he is...
Yeah, fuck you, Feather.